Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Sebastian, you're waking up this morning to this incredibly sad news of the loss of our colleague in here, Sean Rocks. I would imagine you were probably interviewed on the publication of every one of your books since he started presenting Arena back in 2009, but you were also very close on a personal basis.
Well, it does happen, doesn't it? We were colleagues, I suppose, and when I was trying to make my way in the theatre, he was as well. So I knew him as an actor. We were sort of soldiers on the front line rather than officers or anything like that.
Mm.
And that creates a deep connection in itself.
Was that what made him different as an interlocutor for artists, and that you felt that you were dealing with somebody who was your ally, who had soldiered in the same trenches as you, and not as a critic or a journalist?
Yeah, I mean, that was this. I was trying to think what it is about him that is so important and so rare. And it is exactly that. He wasn't uncritical, but he wasn't a critic. And he understood what it was to put on a play, to publish a book. He knew what it was like to hear the whistle and go up the ladder, as it were, and face the bullets. So he was down in the trenches with you. That's your feeling of comradeship.
Mm.
And even in a tactile way, I remember each time going in for each book, he would have it in his hands and be almost patting it, you know, and saying something magical about the book before you began, off air. You know, you can't ask for more than that. And I came to rely on him almost without noticing. And I remember doing an interview, first long interview I did with him was in Ennis. And it was a chance in a longer format to realize what a consummate, deep diving person he was. And he would bring you down with him, but he would never tug on the air pipe. You know, he would never discombobulate you or discommode you, which sometimes people think they have to do, you know, but he never did that.
Yeah.
And then produced actually a sort of Sean Rockian magic that no one else could do.
Were you conscious of that going on when you went into studio? Because I was interviewed by him twice, and
yeah.
He gave the breathing space to the conversation to allow for it to disappear off into tangents and make connections and things that you probably hadn't considered. And those were the things that always resonated with listeners the most,
yeah.
I think. Were you conscious
exactly.
Every time you went into studio that he was weaving this little bit of magic all that time?
Well, yes, because, I mean, there is a sense that the public, whoever we are or they are, like, you know, a sort of incisive, slightly combative style. But he was exactly the opposite of that. And I think that is the secret of the longevity of the programme. I never felt... And there was no disconnect between Sean in his studio and Sean in his house, you know, with his wonderful wife and kids. He was the same man. And there is a sort of... There is something called, I don't know, celestial bonhomie that he had, a sort of loveliness to him as a man, that you grew to understand better as the years went by and really depend on. I mean, I saw him. I felt when I saw the strapline in the Irish Times, it's a commonplace to say that you're stunned or you're shocked, but I was overwhelmed. I just couldn't credit, and I never expected to read such a piece of information in my lifetime, because he was also 8 years younger than me. So I was thinking, well, I'll have him at least for the next 20 years. When I'm tottering around, Sean will still be there as my comrade.
It's also testament, though, isn't it, to how much of a keystone, how foundational he was to exploration of and platforming the arts in this country, that you should feel so keenly that loss now.
I'm shocked by it, Philip, to be honest. I mean, I was very impressed always by Mike Murphy and Miles Dungan, who were his predecessors. But Sean is there for a long, 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 long time. And to keep a show fresh, I mean, as an actor, well, he knew the difficulty of that. And to have his enthusiasms directed towards you was truly to sit yeah. in a beneficent breeze.
I think actually one of the things that should probably be noted about him is that as you were coming in for all of those book interviews, Sebastian, and every other author, Sean was walking around that building with each and every single one of those books in his hand, making little notes in the margins and so on. And he read them all, and he had deep thoughts about them all. And he probably didn't do any of you guys any favors, because an interview with Sean Rocks was so comprehensive and so good that by the end of it, you say, oh, well, I don't really need to read Sebastian Barry's latest book now. I've heard everything about it.
What a tragic outcome. No, but having said that, you know, the last thing we did, well, we did a lovely program on David Marcus last year, but the previous year we did an event for All God's Time, which is a book, if anyone knows, it is quite difficult. It has some difficult themes in it. But Sean, because he was Sean, and because he was only interested in the thing itself, to protopram, as the Greeks say, he was able to bring that program to the moon in some way that I still can't fathom, you know, how he did it. And it was a sort of exaltation, a sort of breathing out. And there were a number of, say, survivors in the audience, and he spoke towards them in some way. His speaking and his thoughts went in all directions all at the same time. I mean, he was, in that sense, a work of art himself.
Absolutely. And the great thing about the modern era is that you have a legacy of all of his broadcasting there now, which we can all go back to and stream on the RTE website. Sebastian Barry, thank you very much. Can I say, on behalf of everybody in here, that we all loved working with Sean Rocks, but producers and researchers particularly loved working with him and getting an assignment to that programme, because he was knowledgeable, he was intuitive, he was a quick study, he was even quicker on his feet on air. There's a couple of occasions I bumped into Sean while out for a walk with Catherine in the Wicklow Hills, and such was the friendliness of the man that an hour later you would still be standing there, sinking into the bog, chatting intensely as night would fall around you. A great friend, a great colleague, undoubtedly one of the leading broadcasters of his generation, and unfortunately he takes a bit of the culture of this place with him as he leaves us. Many of you will know that as well as presenting Arena, Sean had a programme on Lyric FM on Sundays, and on his last episode of that show last weekend, he asked for the audience to indulge him in listening to an arrangement by cellist Anne Sophie von Otter. We're happy to indulge him again now in listening to some of that music which brought him such joy.
Just coming up to the final few selections on Sean Rocks and Sunday for the Sunday afternoon. And in fact, what I'd said to what I want to do in this final half hour, if you'll allow me indulge myself for about 11 minutes at this point in time, when it was first mooted that I might do something on Sunday afternoons here on Lyric, I remember starting, do you know what I want to do? I want to kind of mix one kind of music up against another kind of music, and maybe pieces of music that don't necessarily obviously sit together, but that somehow musically fit together. And at the time, I had been just interviewed Anne-Sophie von Otter, the great singer, on Arena, and I went off listening to her recordings with Brooklyn Rider and that wonderful version she has of the Sting song Practical Arrangement. And that Sting song, I was playing around on the computer at home and I was like, what piece of music could come out of that? And eventually one of my favourite string quartet movements came to mind, and it followed on from it in my musical mind perfectly indeed. So my little indulgence to myself for the next 11 minutes is to listen to Anne-Sophie von Otter doing that Practical Arrangement and leading into the Ravel String Quartet, second movement of which I love so much.
For the moon, is it really so implausible that you and I could soon come to some kind of arrangement? I'm not asking for the moon. I've always been a realist. When it's really nothing more can do. We could start with separate beds. I could sleep alone or learn to. I'm not suggesting that we'd find some earthly paradise forever. I mean, how often does that happen now? Answers probably never, but we could come to an arrangement, a practical arrangement, and you could learn to love me given time. Not promising the moon.